This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree and their V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world. Man, that was authoritative, that one, for some reason.
Thank you.
Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, and that is the slightly verklempt, but otherwise here, Tom Merritt.
I'm gavel. I can't do that.
Gavel-klempt?
Can't make gavel and verklempt work. As much as they share a V, you just can't mush them together. Hi, Scott Johnson.
You brought a little goober home with you from Dragon Con. I'm sorry.
I'm not here to talk about the past. I'm not going to Mark McGuire this. I'm not like Ibbot, just playing for sympathy.
Right.
Oh, I got the con. We're all sick. Everybody who went to Dragon Con got sick.
I don't know anyone who isn't, except for the happy couple. They appear to be free of the virus.
Well, yeah, they had the immune fighting powers of marriage.
Wow, hadn't really considered that.
Yeah,
I need to get remarried,
and also Jamaica.
That's right.
I don't even care if I'm sick if I'm in Jamaica. In fact, one of the sickest I've ever been. I was at a wedding in the Turks and Caicos Islands. I didn't give a damn that I was sick. It was so nice.
Well, jerk chicken will go a long way. Speaking of jerk chicken, that's a terrible transition. Forget I even said it. With us today, nothing to do with jerk chicken at all. We have with us Andy Beach on the line. Andy, hello.
You called me jerk chicken in college, actually, so perfect.
It's perfect. It's fitting, eh? Andy's old friend of the program, old friend of the network and community, and just an all-around awesome dude. He has an amazing family. He sends jellies into TMS. He's a video expert like none I've ever talked to before. And it's about time we got you on here, man.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun. I'm glad I'm here.
Well, I'm glad, too. Also joining us, fourth chair this week, is kind of one of our regulars now. In fact, I think now today will mean the record. It's Jenny Josephson, everyone.
Hi.
Welcome back.
I'm so happy to be back.
Are you? Because I'm really happy to have you here.
This is about no disrespect to the show I work on every single day and love, but I think much like Tom, this is really one of the favorite things I get to do as part of being in this world.
Well, you get to vent all of your weeks, whatevers, and we're happy to be the place that receives your venting.
I feel like Jenny might love the show more than we do, Scott.
I do too. I'm a little worried about it.
It's entirely possible.
I have some concerns. All right. Well, the show consists of headlines, and we're going to play them now.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Oh, Tom, time for news. What do you got
there? Yeah, thank you, Hoover. TV's Egon sent us the news that a 54-year-old Spanish man received the world's first 3D-printed chest prosthetic made from titanium. So close.
Wow.
Spanish doctors asked a Melbourne, Australian company called Anatomics to build the replacement body parts. 12 days after the final surgery, the patient was discharged, is recovering well. So now all we need is someone to actually make adamantium real, and we'll be ready for Wolverine.
Oh, my. Andy, what do you think of this particular progress in 3D printing? Does this scare you?
No, I think it's awesome. Not this particular story, but there's been a whole bunch of kids that are getting 3D printed limbs recently. And every one of those stories, like every time I read it, it's like it gets a little teary in the room. It must be allergies. I don't know what.
Doesn't it seem to you, though, that the fabrication process of making these cool things is so easy for 3D printing people with stuff you can buy off the shelf for a few thousand dollars? Doesn't it seem a little strange that we haven't gotten this far quicker with these kinds of ideas with regular prosthetics? I mean, I know regular prosthetics are great and they do good things and all that, but I just feel like we've taken it further.
Keep in mind, 3D printing titanium is still kind of an industrial process. It's expensive and it's complicated. So it's not, this isn't the kind of thing you can do off the shelf. But what Andy's talking about, that Scott's talking about, you can do like off the shelf printing of prosthetic legs now. It's crazy.
Right? Yeah, it's totally cool. But it seems like the sky's the limit. The more we're able to fabricate out of materials that previously were hard to do, it won't be all PVC in the future. My guess is, Jenny, you'll be able to go to Walmart, pick up an off the shelf 3D printer and shove any old material in there and then make whatever you need. Replacement parts for your washer dryer, a new chest made of titanium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the other thing too is like we've been talking about these amazing medical advances and what people are doing to have prosthetic limbs, but then there's also this weird floating undercurrent of this idea of transhumanism or posthumanism, which is the less professional version of people trying to get ahead using these physical or technological capabilities. And it surfaces every once in a while when you see people like putting, you know, bionic implants under their skin themselves at home. And that's when I start thinking, like, once you get into nanotech and biotech, like, how far are we from the X-Men? I mean, we made a Wolverine joke, but we may not be that far.
Well, we have a mess between here and there, though. We have, like Minority Report, Peter Stormare eyeball replacement surgery in a in a bathroom or whatever. Like, we're going to have some ugly moments of weird transplant-y kind of things happening. And then eventually, I mean, I'd love to live in a future where I could go, I've sliced off my foot. I'm going to go upstairs now and print a replacement.
Ah, crap. Slice my foot off again.
Yeah. Just get a replacement.
I got to go print one out. I'll be right back. Do you think this 54-year-old Spanish man is now going around to all his nephews like, come on, punch me right here
as hard as you can. I was just wondering that. I would. Wouldn't you? I mean, you got to have
That's dangerous.
Got to have some fun with this. Take a baseball to the chest or something.
Don't punch Uncle Leon's chest. You'll break your knuckles. I don't know if his name's Leon.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know why I picked that. Yeah. EFC88 sent us a link to a YouTube video announcing that Marvel's Jessica Jones will premiere on Netflix November 20th. Kristen Ritter stars as a former superhero who opens her own detective agency. Video shows a door. It has the words Alias Investigations on the glass. The glass is shattered by a body falling through it, followed by the outline of a woman standing in the middle of a New York street right below the Avengers Tower. That kind of just tells you the whole teaser right there.
I don't think it says much about it at all, and it's unfortunate because I thought they were further along with this, and maybe they are, and this is just their way. I mean, this literally
remember
a teaser.
First Daredevil teaser was just like kind of a Daredevil eye view of things.
Yeah, that's
it
true.
That was pretty limited.
That was pretty limited too. I don't know. The hard part with this one is, and I can't speak for everybody here, but the Jessica Jones character is one of the characters in the Marvel Universe I'm least familiar with. I don't know a lot about what's his name, Cage either. Luke Cage, who is next on the list of Netflix series, and I'm excited for that one as well. So as stoked as I am and as tied in as I am to knowing this is coming out, I know so little about the character and her arc that this teaser really tells me nothing other than I think I just have faith that they did really well with Daredevil, so they're probably going to do fine here.
I kind of like these lesser-known characters that get spinoff pieces because I was not a huge Marvel person growing up, but I knew the big names. These are all names I'm unfamiliar with, but they're in that universe, so it's fun to watch side stories unfold and things that cross and merge. So that's the enjoyment I get out of it.
Were you more of a DC guy growing up? Because that's what I was doing.
I did do DC, and also, frankly, I just wasn't that big a comic book guy. Like it was, I transitioned very quickly out of comic books straight into Stephen King, and never went back for some reason. But we'll have a whole Dark Tower conversation.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Yeah, that needs to happen. I forgot we have all these Stephen King fans on the show. Holy crap!
And the quiz is Dark Tower.
Very well, might be. Jenny, what do you think of this?
Super excited for this. I obviously love Daredevil with the white hot heat of a thousand suns. But what I'm most excited for is building the Marvel TV universe and the crossovers. Like what people loved about the comics, one of the things they loved was this insane crossing over of different stories. And I mean, the guy who runs Marvel Television, Jeff Loeb, basically said it's going to happen, you know, between the Netflix series and the ABC series at some point when all the worlds are well enough established. And he even made a joke that like Clark Gregg was ready to pay his own airfare and pay his own hotel just to get on the Daredevil set. Like that's how excited they all are at the idea of merging these worlds. And I don't think that the outline of that Avengers Tower was any like false advertising. Like well, I have a real feeling about this.
They like these crossovers and stuff, but Tom, it's the Defenders we're really looking forward to, right? Which is eventually, they've said that eventually all these series will tie into a standalone series called The Defenders.
Oh, and that's where you bring in your bigger crossovers, right? Yeah. So you save that, you tease it, and then you have all three of these, you know, Luke Cage, Daredevil, and Jessica Jones come to the Defenders series. I think it's a mini series, right?
Yeah.
And that's where you do a Mark Ruffalo cameo or a well, you're not going to get Robert Downey Jr. Probably won't get Robert.
You might, but yeah.
But that's where you do your crossover.
Yeah, I totally agree, and it'll end up being like yeah, here's who you'll get. You'll get maybe Ruffalo, probably Falcon. I don't know the actor's name, I always forget. And
Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, I like that guy a lot. And then so much I forgot his name. And then there was one other guy, but you can always count on, I wouldn't call them B tier, but the ones that are just below Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, you can probably sneak those in. And just imagine the nerd out we're all going to have. Like, this is a super smart thing for them, period. We've talked about it a bunch on the show, but this is maybe the most obscure one they're going to do. A lot of people know about Daredevil. Enough people know about Luke Cage. Jessica Jones is a bit of an unknown quantity to a lot of people, but I think they've built the fan trust, and I think it's going to be good. So more teasers, please, I guess is what I'm saying. This was too short.
And there was no actual footage.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's like a comic book, I guess.
Hey, guess what? November 20th, we can watch the whole damn thing. So,
all right. I'm in.
Just wait till then.
All right.
Piscator NF sent us the much-discussed comment from actor Mark Ruffalo, or Ruffalo, that seems to indicate the Hulk will not appear in Marvel's Captain America Civil War. The comment came during an interview with an Italian film site, which quoted him as saying, quote, I believed that Hulk would be in the film, but at the end, it was evident that they needed to reveal that the Hulk did something very significant and that Marvel wanted to use this in a more upfront manner. My character was inserted into the script, but it was later removed. Who knows? Maybe Hulk will never return. Haha. However, Marvel want to keep the revelation of what happened to a secret because it is something truly significant.
His last part started to fall apart.
Drunk Hulk.
It sounded, yeah.
Well, it's not translated, right? Because it was a Spanish site, so it's quoted in Spanish, and then they bring it back in English.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that, because at the time I thought, when I first read it and it started to kind of explode at the end, I thought, oh, this sounds like a man who's broken an NDA and realized
Mark
it.
Mark Whiskio, am I right?
I'm pretty excited about Civil War for lots of reasons, primarily because I think the Captain America standalone series is my favorite of the Marvel movies, and what they do next is interesting. I read the Civil War thing almost completely, with the exception of a couple of side stories. But I mean, they even had Squirrel Girl in that series, which is crazy. But what a fantastic comic book to base anything on. The idea, though, that the Hulk may not show up in there, regardless of what excuse they sort of give, or that we won't have Spider-Man as a significant player in it, that there's rumors floating around that Black Panther will basically stand in for the Spider-Man role as was in the comics. And we know the MCU is a separate beast and it runs on its own steam. But part of that is what makes me so excited, because I feel like I'm going to get this story I loved and the arc that I love, but I'm going to get it told in a slightly different way. And it's like getting it new again, a little like, you know, Walking Dead versus the comics or something. I'm excited.
Here's an interesting thing, which is, last night I just watched like the extra features after Age of Ultron, because we bought it on streaming. And there was this whole amazing little segment about the Infinity Stones. And so here's my question. Which Infinity Stone is Hulk going after when he's not appearing in Civil War? Because we got two more left that are just kind of floating out there needing to be established. That's my big wild theory where I think the Hulk has gone.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, he's going to get a stone. And then he'll come back with the stone in whatever movie he comes back in.
Yeah. Or there's it's unsubstantiated, but some pretty good rumors to the effect that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 might feature the Hulk
there you go.
In significant ways, which would have a lot to do with the stones. And
but then that's been denied too. I mean, all of this is Marvel likes to mess with us, right?
Yeah.
They're very good at dropping hints and then obscuring hints. And I wouldn't be surprised if they told Ruffalo to say that stuff. Like, here, mix it up.
Yeah.
Get a little.
Have this vodka.
In case you missed it, last week was Force Friday, in which fans all over the world lined up at retailers for a chance to give them their money to buy Star Wars toys or buy a Star Wars toy they didn't want because they were out of stock on the one they did want. Star Fury Zeta sent us the wrap up, and of course, we couldn't talk about anything else but the Lego X-Wing, unless it was the Millennium Falcon remote controlled quadcopter or maybe new lightsabers. Wait, was there another one? BB-8 seemed a little popular, too.
Yeah, there's talk that they've already made billions since that day worldwide on selling everything they sold. You can't find those BB-8s to save your life. Did anybody here get out there and get anything? No?
I did not.
That silence is deadly. Tom, you had a BB-8 though at the con.
Well, yeah, Sphero was nice enough to send me a BB-8, and they sent one to Brian Brushwood as well.
Nice.
And we let both of them go during the live broadcast of Night Attack. One of them never made it back.
Oh no!
So I gave the surviving BB-8 to Brushwood for the sake of the Brushwood daughters, so they could play with it. And I have ordered a replacement that I bought, and it will arrive at the end of November.
Oh my gosh, dude.
So yeah, these things are popular.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Andy, do you, I don't know if you're like me, but I was at the mall the other day and every store, and it didn't matter what kind of store you had. The Container Store had stuff. The both shoe stores we stopped at, everyone has Star Wars stuff. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's. I mean, even I was actually flying back yesterday, and even in the airport, there's like Star Wars swag in places you wouldn't expect because everybody's ready for it. And I'm only thankful that my daughter hasn't quite glommed on to the Star Wars yet. She's still more of a pony girl, so I've got some time and I'm saving some money and I'm just banking it for the day that she rolls over. To there,
like I'm imagining like Star Wars neck pillows. Star Wars.
Oh, it was. I mean, yeah, it was of that ilk. There was actually, I believe, I saw a Star Wars like rolling case.
Oh my, that's cool. I'm just so surprised at. Well, I shouldn't be surprised. This is by all accounts, this is the year. This is the time. If you're gonna market the crap out of it and have a giant corporation like Disney behind it, this is when you do your big push. But I guess I'm just surprised to see lines at a Target at midnight that are longer than, you know, video game console releases or Black Friday campers, or all of that stuff seemed pale in comparison to the line I saw at our local Target. It's crazy. So I gave up. I'm like, forget it. I'm not doing this.
It seems pretty smart, actually, when you think about all the buildup before The Phantom Menace. And it seems really smart to release these toys now because toy sales will just go on our desperate need to be pleased by these movies, regardless of what happens with the movies. So, you know, they get their billions in and then show us the movie, and whatever happens, happens. Even though I think the movie's going to be great. I have no doubts.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Looking forward to it. Only fears. No doubts, only fears. I like that. There's something positive and horribly negative about that stance. Yeah. I like it.
Andy wanted to talk about the Arrow trailer, which was shown at Dragon Con. In fact, a lot of the Arrow and Flash folks were walking around. I believe Veronica rode in an elevator with John Barrowman, and he put his arm around her. And Eileen and I rode in an elevator with Caitlin, the woman who plays Caitlin from The Flash, and didn't recognize her till she was already out. Anyway, in the trailer on Arrow, we got looks at the new suits. A new geek for Felicity to hang out with, Speedy in her suit, new villains Damian Dark and Mr. Terrific. We also see Felicity cooking all of her dinner in a suburban McMansion. Arrow comes back October 7th. Andy, I take it you're a fan.
I am a fan. It surprised me. I actually didn't start watching till season 2. I think the whole first season was in the can, and I was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. And I've been with it and The Flash ever since. Was super jazzed to see Neil McDonough in it. Love him. Love when he shows up. And
oh,
stuff.
He's great. He's the crazy season 3.
Justified.
Yeah, he's fantastic in there. So good in there.
Yep. Yeah, love it when he shows up and stuff. So looking forward to it coming back. Can't wait.
That's great. Yeah, I like to see him show up too. I'm so behind on this, and I haven't seen a single Flash. I feel like I should turn in my nerd card right now.
Oh, no, just go back. I mean, you're a cord cutter, right?
Yeah.
So you got every excuse in the world, which is got to prioritize. But I would say go back and watch them, both of them, Arrow and Flash.
Well, I've seen Arrow up through all of season two and maybe the first few of three.
Oh, you've gotten through the hardest part of Arrow then.
Yeah, Arrow, the first season was, you know, the kind of WB season, and then it got a lot better in two. And I liked three so far, but then got sidetracked and just haven't gotten back to it. And it's part of this larger conversation we don't have to have now, but about just choice being so overwhelming right now. There's so much demanding my eyeballs, and you start to do that thing where you'll open Netflix or something and start flicking through it, and there's 1,000 choices that would work, and you can't pick one. And I'm having
that problem. If you haven't done The Flash, totally recommend going back and seeing it. I really enjoyed it, and actually was looking forward to it almost more than anything else I was watching last year.
I've yet
Barry Allen.
I've yet to hear. I've yet to hear a bad review. I haven't heard anybody that I know say
that. The
thing
about The Flash too is like it suffers a little bit at the beginning of that first season thing that the Arrow suffered from, but it gets past it so much faster. Yep. By mid-season you're rolling. You're like, "Okay, this is a superhero show."
And we're only a season in, right? That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. That I can catch up on. So,
do you watch either of these, Jenny?
So, we did not make it through season one of Arrow because it was so WB and we were just like, ugh, enough. And after like 10 seasons of Smallville, we felt like we sort of did our hard slog through the teenification of these stories. But then we started hearing like all these great things, and then we started hearing all the great things about Flash. And now we have sort of like regret that we hope is not going to turn into like missing the entire series of Parks and Rec or 24. So Matt and I were sort of looking at each other during this going, I don't think we're going to catch up.
I don't want to wait for my secret identity. Yeah, you can almost skip the first season of Arrow. You should probably watch a few episodes just to get the flavor. But
yeah.
What you shouldn't do is skip the part of current. You should never skip the part of Current Geek where Tom's saying just now. Never, never skip that. That was amazing.
Jenny, for me, they both started as like background stuff. Like while I was doing other things, they were just on in the background. And then somewhere I flipped the switch and they were the thing that I had to watch on the big TV at night when I was taking time. So
sold. Sold.
Last week, blockbuster movie pioneer Steven Spielberg told the Associated Press, quote, "We were around when the Western died, and there will be a time when the superhero movie goes the way of the Western." I don't know if he said it like that, but I wish he had. Naturally, lots of people had thoughts. Most recently, director Zack Snyder, director of Watchmen, Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, upcoming director of Justice League Part 1, Justice League Part 2. He's got a stake in superheroes. So Snyder said, Spielberg, he might not be wrong. I think it puts more pressure on us, the filmmakers, to not just crank out superhero movies for the sake of it. And I'm guessing Hateful Eight director Quentin Tarantino said, Westerns are dead?
I mean, I think the funny thing about the Western is, well, I am biased here. I want more Westerns. I never think there are enough. And when they do come out, they're sometimes a little bit indie and off the radar, but I'll find them and I'll watch them because I love them. If you told me right now, let's end the show and watch 310 to Yuma together.
You just blew my mind, Scott. Mm. Does that mean, like, eventually when Spielberg's right and superhero movies are no longer blockbusters, that we'll only get, like, cool indie superhero movies from Quentin Tarantino?
See, I think that's kind of where I'm heading here. I'm saying that if we really do wring this rag out as hard as we can and there's nothing left and people are on the mainstream sick of it, it does open the opportunity for this to go in ways and directions that we hadn't previously thought of. So you go from John Wayne to Hateful Eight or Django or something interesting and new. And, you know, Andy, it's like it may also spell the resurgence of Westerns, actually. I don't know. But these things are cyclical, right?
Superhero Westerns.
Actually, you're not far from the truth. There's an Avengers series out right now in comic form where that's set in the 1800s. That's like, you know, Iron Man's like the blacksmith of the town and stuff like it's awesome. Really good stuff. But anyway, sorry, Andy, you were gonna.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, first of all, Longmire's back, so I'll go ahead and put that out there. So I don't think Westerns are quite dead. For fun, because I did see this in the lineup, I went to the genre filter on IMDb, and there's about 500 Westerns in production and planning that come out between now and, I don't know, 2021. So I don't know about dead. I don't disagree that maybe we were at peak Western at some point, and now we are at peak superhero. Mm. And at some point, you're no longer at the peak, and you get into other territory.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way to look at it, and I think you're probably right, and the cycle will swing back to something else. I'm really happy that there's a sci-fi cycle right now that we're sort of in. We're pulling away from fantasy just a tiny bit, and then that'll go back to the other way. These cycles are okay with me. I just wish Westerns had... I wish Westerns didn't look like death to executives, because executives are very slow to mainstream a movie. And when they do, they meddle with it too much. Like Cowboys versus Aliens, or whatever that was called, based on a comic book, was pretty good source material. And they kind of blew it. And they blew it for lots of Hollywood reasons. And so they don't take risks. They're too scared to do it. I understand the climate and film is different now. But, man, I could use more stuff. And maybe TV's where it's going to be. Maybe that's where we just need to keep it. Maybe, you know, things. Justified was basically a modern day Western. So is the one you just mentioned. My brain just went blank.
Longmire.
Longmire. there are other opportunities on TV. There's a Magnificent Seven remake coming. I think that's film, though. But anyway, there's a chance here. And I'm just saying, if Spielberg's right, then fine. Hey, Spielberg, how about you make your first Western ever? How about that? He never made one.
Well, at least Zack Snyder learned the literal most important rule in all of filmmaking, which is never disagree with Steven Spielberg.
He handled it pretty deftly, I think, because he's basically like saying, yeah, we have a responsibility to try to do the best we can, and didn't instead say, ah, he's old, go make another Jaws movie or whatever. And I saw Crystal Skull. Bah, this really could have been ugly, but I'm glad he went that direction. That's good. Good job, Zack.
Well, the big news in the technology world of the week was Apple announcing the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus with 3D touch, a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, an Apple TV with a remote that has a microphone for voice search and a touchpad for gesture control, and a new stainless steel watch line. One of them is in rose gold, as is one of the iPhones. Thanks to DNeil99 for the submission to the subreddit. And if I didn't mention the subreddit, folks, by gosh, get in there and submit stuff. It helps us put the show together. Currentgeek.reddit.com.
Yeah, I agree. And also, one thing I saw today, I just wanted to mention this. I know it's been all the talk all week on your show and other tech shows, but the iPad Pro with that pencil was demoed to TechCrunch, and they did a video of him using it. And I just want to let artists know that this may finally be the thing we were looking for. It looks that way. It's hard to tell. This is a guy who... clearly better than your average doodler, but he was having some amazing non-lag, seemed really smooth, really pinpoint precision stuff happening.
It's pricey, though, isn't it?
It is very pricey. You're going to pay, if you get that pen and the iPad and forget the keyboard accessory, you're still over $1,000 if you get the $900-and-whatever-dollar one with the most storage on it, which is probably what you're going to want to do if you're going to be doing a lot of art. So it's a little pricey, absolutely, but as a portable equivalent or better to what a Wacom could do for you, that's cheap compared to what you would pay for that kind of experience.
Doesn't things like the Cintiq, don't they plug directly into your computer?
They do. So my Cintiq 22HD sitting right over here plugs directly into my Mac or a PC, and that's how that functions. You work in Photoshop or Paint or whatever you're going to work in. The Surface Pro stuff, they're pretty good. The 2 was the peak of this. That thing was smooth as pie, really great for artists. For some reason, the 3 is hitchy and a little laggy, and nobody's exactly sure why. I can't speak for Windows 10. I only did it with 8. But what people want is something small, light, very portable, that they can whip out, do a thing, and then easily move that thing around to when they're in production mode on their production systems. So graphic artists and illustrators are pretty stoked about this if they can deliver what we think we're going to get. And from that TechCrunch video, I have much higher hopes now than I did before, because before it's just video and them talking high talk about it, which you expect on stage. But this looks like it may actually be the thing. And so I'm very excited to get more reviews. I want to see more people with some hands-on, some actual artists use it. And then who knows? It's kind of a big deal. So we'll see.
I might sound crazy, but I actually don't think it's that too out of line price-wise. Like,
you're crazy.
I know. It's comparable to the Surface. It's comparable to a luxury laptop in that line. It's spendy, but it is got the Pro tag on it. It's going to be something that you know you're not just going to buy it and read off of it at the beach or do other things. You're going to be using it as a work device, and so I'm not shocked by the price. It has to live up to it. I can't wait to see one demoed somewhere, but yeah, it was probably the thing I was by far most interested in of the announcements.
Yeah, and it's still difficult to say whether this would be a good idea to recommend to an executive or somebody who needs a laptop replacement. I'm not sure it's that yet, but as I mean, mine have a very narrow use case here, and if it is good at what I hope it's good at, it will actually be inexpensive for me to get it, because it will be a big productivity bump when it comes to being able to have that thing at the ready all the time. And being able to translate work back and forth from production machine to that. I mean, those kinds of things are really, really important to me. But, you know, it may not be for Donald Trump or whoever. That's a terrible... I don't know why I used his example. I don't know why I used Donald Trump.
You just wanted to work him in. Well, it's like clickbait.
It's a disease.
it's a disease. Yeah.
You're like, oh, if somebody notes that we mentioned it, maybe they'll think, you know, we said something funny about Trump.
Great.
You know? Like every comedian's doing it right now.
Send your emails in.
Much like the Vatican employs one of their own to be an advocate for Lucifer. We often employ Jenny to be an advocate for the normals.
Yes.
On the Daily Tech News Show. Jenny, what did you make of all of this Apple announcement?
So, believe me, I am well and firmly in the Apple ecosystem. I am taken by their design as a company. I love almost everything they do, except, by the way, cloud services. So, Scott, that whole, like, magically whisking from device to this, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was left cold by this cycle of Apple announcements because I'm very happy with my Roku. So the Apple TV to me was like maybe a better version of what I'm already experiencing. But to me, it represents three more hours of setting up passwords for a new device and doing a thing. And I was like, if I'm already happy with the little ecosystem on a stick, why would I buy the next one? So maybe I'm just off cycle for that. And then the iPad Pro, I think, looks amazing, but I'm looking for less encumbrances. I'm looking for the thing. I'm looking to be a transhuman. I'm looking for the thing on my eyes that allows me to view the world without having to hold a big clunky thing in my hand. And the phone, you know what? Like, Matt might get one because his phone, he's got a, I don't even know, he's got a 5C or something way back. So he might end up with one. But to me, that felt incremental and not something. So I guess if you had to peg me on what I was most excited about, it might be the pencil.
It is. It seems like a pretty nice piece of kit, even on its own. So I'm with you there.
British.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've been hanging around Terpster too much, but
it's a nice piece of kit, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think the Apple TV is the most intriguing to me because of the voice search possibility. Mm-hmm. If I can really control that thing with my voice, if I can say I want to watch Doctor Who, or if I can say, you know, go back 5 minutes, and it just works. That puts it in front of a Roku or a Fire TV for me.
That's a huge user experience bump for sure.
Yeah, man, yeah. You've got to. I'm sorry, but to other than that, like step back from that. Vudu better make an app for the Apple TV. Amazon, you better make an app for the Apple TV. Freaking Google Play better make an app for the Apple TV, because otherwise I'm going right back to my Roku that has all of those.
Yeah, it's true. The agnostic platforms are going to have everybody, and that's a tricky bit for sure. I mean, for me, it's about user experience on that thing, and I have this feeling that experience will be strong. I don't know until we get it and try it, but all of the services are important. But the big thing for me is there is an app ecosystem already in place that is gargantuan, and just the idea that there are people with, let's say, just people with kids. Let's just look at that demographic who want this thing for all the reasons people want to watch and consume media, but also know that their entire library of universal apps of games, for example, will pop up on that thing and run, at least to some degree. That is a huge.
Well, you say that. I don't know that that's going to work that way.
If they don't do that, they're crazy.
Because remember when we had universal apps for iPad?
Yeah.
Not every app worked.
Oh, yeah. No, it took a while. And I hope they don't do that again on the timing.
They will.
But they eventually get it.
TVOS is not iOS. Remember, they called it TVOS.
Oh, that's a good point.
It's going to take some adapting.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so there may be a rough and tumble go at the beginning, and that may be true. But if they figure out a way to harness that so that I just spent $1.99 for a rad game that runs on my iPad, my iPhone, and the TV, and it cost me once, and everyone can play it, they just won the fight. Because that's a huge, well, at least they've won the fight for casual gaming in the living room. And that's $100
of in-app purchases later.
Yeah, all that stuff is a concern, I suppose.
So many donuts.
This episode of Current Geek has been brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a good, simple payment solution, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Bitcoin, Apple Pay, Venmo, cards, and more with one single, simple integration. How about getting $50,000 off in your first transactions, absolutely fee-free? Go to BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek and try it out today. That's BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek. Hopefully it's cool. I mean, we'll see what they do. I know what is cool, though, and that is something we do on the show every week. We call it the Pop Quiz.
America scores and wins.
Way to go, America.
Yeah, good job, America. We're proud of you. Sometimes you do some stupid stuff, but most of the time I like you.
You're like a crazy uncle.
Yeah, it is. So we're going to, you know, we used to say redheaded stepchild, but I feel like that's now bad. That's not a nice thing to say.
It's offensive to redheads.
It's also offensive to stepchildren.
And stepchildren, right.
It's a terrible thing. Anyway, let's
never say that again.
I'm not going to say it again. That's it. We're going to get to our pop quiz. That means you guys get to answer areas or things in your areas of expertise. These are questions, 8 of them each. We're going to start with Andy this week, and your category, my good sir, is internet video trivia.
Okay.
Now, you know a lot about video, about codecs, about compression. You've written books on the subject.
I did.
And I've read part of one, and it was deep. Like, you know your stuff. So this is something I'm really counting on you, man. I'm really counting on you.
All right.
But no pressure. No pressure at all. If you get the answer correct, you hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And here's your first question. And Tom will keep score of the whole thing. What was the first console to get Netflix streaming?
That would be the Xbox 360.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Ooh, see, that was a trick question. So I'm going to give you a bonus point for that, because you could have said Roku, thinking that kind of console, but you correctly interpreted the intention.
Yeah, very nice. In what year was Real Player first released? Ah, remember Real Player. The scourge of the internet.
94?
You are so close. 95 is the correct answer. So close. What was the first video uploaded to YouTube? The title of it. If you get one, if you get the key word of it right, you win.
I know I have known this in days past. I no longer know it.
I'll tell you it what. Is, you can fill in gone. The blank. It is me at the blank.
Nope, I can't do it.
Me at the zoo was the
you
first
You lose a quarter video. Point for that, too. Come on. Come on. Have you read Year in Tech History? It's in there. Yes.
Illustrated by Scott Johnson. Next question. In 2008, Netflix made a deal with what entertainment company to get access to more than 2,500 titles for Netflix streaming? And I will say to help, this has since been dissolved.
Right, Epix.
You are close. It is Starz.
Oh, right.
Okay. Epix, I think, is the current one that's now going away, right?
Epix is going away.
Yeah, that's going
next.
Away now.
Yeah, yeah. It's a similar set. In fact, I think that was the replacement when Starz took off.
You're going to lose 1/100th of a point for that. It's really coming.
That's 1 out of 100 episodes of that terrible show that was on Starz. All right, next up. In what year was Justin TV launched?
And he appeared on CNET Live.
2008?
Oh, you almost said it. 2007.
Seven.
You almost did. That's amazing.
You win back 0.02 of a point for almost saying it.
Man. All that Twitch money now, that Justin guy. Oof. What media company sued YouTube claiming they engaged in, quote, brazen and, quote, massive copyright infringement?
That sure does sound like Viacom.
Sure does to me, and you would be correct.
That's the way they talk.
This is where Content ID came about. It was from that whole mess. All right, final.
It works great.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah, every never, time. Never. Never an issue. Always a perfect.
I never have to fight myself over a claim.
Ever. In 2014, Nullsoft, the maker of Winamp, were bought by what company?
I'm sorry, what year?
This was 2014, last year. That old chestnut Nullsoft, maker of Winamp and Shoutcast, the original Shoutcast. All that business.
Wasn't Apple, was it?
Nope. It was Radionomy.
Oh, sure.
Radionomy.
I think you get a half point for correctly answering it wasn't Apple, was
it? He does. Yeah, see, he knows. All right, final question. What was the name of the separate DVD service Netflix wanted to launch in 2011 but canceled after negative reactions from customers?
Well, it should have been called Worst Idea Ever. but I do not recall the actual name.
It was a bad name. I'll give you a hint. No, I won't give you a hint. I'll just tell you what it is. It's Quickster. Quickster.
Quickster.
That was a real stupid idea. There's a really
with
great...
With a W, too. Right?
Yeah.
It was Internet QW.
Q-W-I-K-S-T-E-R, yeah.
Half point admission of ignorance bonus. Oh,
so real quick on that note, somebody... Now I don't remember where I heard it, but there was a really great podcasted interview, may have been NPR, where they interviewed the lady that was kind of like... Her and Reed Hastings were like the top two bananas at the company, and talk about this period and what led them to make that weird decision, the strange video game stuff they were going to rent, and then they pulled like 2 days after announcing it or whatever. Like that whole mess. Very interesting backstory. Anyway, I recommend it. I don't even know where to find it, though. It's a total mystery where you can listen to what I heard. So good luck to you. Hang
Scott
on.
I heard something once. It was real interesting.
Yeah, it was don't great. Jenny, it's your turn. Are you ready? How are you feeling?
I'm so nervous.
Don't be nervous. You've done great in the past. Your trivia today was going to be, well, I won't tell you because we may use it for a future one. But instead, we went with something you mentioned at Nerdtacular to Mike Iceworm Boyd, who makes these questions. And that is Chris trivia.
Because
we know you like the Chrises currently working in Hollywood today.
It's the era. It's the greatest era of Chrises that there has ever been.
Million-dollar
Chris Club.
Yeah.
So Chris Evans. This is
trivia
Chris Pine.
About people named Chris who work in the movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's okay. Exactly right.
Chris Hemsworth.
Yep. And you asked for it, so if you lose this, it's all on you.
So really, the answer to every one of these is Chris, right?
I'm so nervous. I don't know if I know. I know a lot, but oh, God. Okay, here we go.
I think you got it. Here we go. First question. What character does Chris Hemsworth, you know, Thor, what character does he play in the 2009 Star Trek movie?
George Kirk.
You are correct. Nicely done.
I thought you were going to ask, what character does Chris Hemsworth play in Thor?
I would have been raked over the coals for that. Next one, Chris Evans plays one of Ramona Flowers' evil ex-boyfriends. What number evil ex-boyfriend does he play? This is in the Scott,
Scott Pilgrim's the world. Yeah. I think he's 3.
You think he's number 3? Let me find out. Incorrect. He is ex-boyfriend number 2, Lucas Lee.
All right.
Oh, you get a 0.9 for that. You're damn close.
Yeah, that was pretty good. 2 and 3, right there. In what movie does Chris Pine play? And you like Chris Pine. I know you like the Chris Pine.
My heart belongs to Pine.
Yeah. In what movie does Chris Pine play a character by the name of Nicholas Devereaux? I can't believe this one. I would never know this.
Super glad I didn't get these.
Lucas Devereaux. Nicholas Devereaux.
Weird ripoff. I don't know.
Incorrect. It is The Princess Diaries 2, Royal Engagement.
Oh, yeah. That was pre my Pine involvement.
Half point.
I should have guessed that, actually.
Ignorance bonus.
Yeah. I really want to see that Coast Guard one. I saw a trailer for the other day. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that looks good. Yeah. Zeke Zachariah looks good.
That looks really great. All right. How tall is Chris Pratt in feet and inches?
He's 6'1".
You are so close. 6'2". That means he's...
Oh, yeah. Another 0.9.
He's an inch and a half shorter than me. That's weird. All right. There you go. Who is the governor of New Jersey?
Chris Christie.
Nice. Well done.
That's not a Chris in Hollywood. Hold on.
By the way, I got to give Mike some credit on this question. You guys would never see this because I'm the only one that does, but he spelled the S's in Chris Christie with dollar signs.
Dollar signs. Nice.
That's fantastic. All right, what is Chris Evans' middle name? By the way, the answer is not adorable, he says in parentheses.
Oh, I was going to... Patrick. Christopher Patrick Evans.
It is Robert is the correct answer.
Yeah,
Robert.
I don't know.
I'm going to give you a half point because it should be Patrick.
All right.
Right.
It does sound better, doesn't it? All right, Chris Pine teamed up with Tom Hardy in which 2012 movie?
Oh...
I never saw it, but I wanted to.
Oh, I do know it. It was with Reese Witherspoon, and it was called This Means War.
You're well done. Jeez.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, I have friends tell me I should have seen that by now because it's good. You didn't like it?
Metza.
I just love those two guys, though. Watch them do anything. What else here? Where are we? Oh, final question. You ready for this one? You ready? All
set? Okay. I'm ready.
All right. What instrument does Christopher Walken demand more of in an iconic SNL skit? Bonus points. For an impression of him saying it.
Guys,
sure.
I gotta have more cowbell.
2 points.
That was too easy. Too easy, except for the part where you had to act it out. That was great.
That's a very poor impersonation of Chris Walken. You can take off a smidge.
I think it was all right. All right, Tom, it's up to you now. It's up to you. They're in your lap. You have the points. Who won?
Well, Andy did a very respectable 3.76 on a very tough category, but Jenny knocking it out of the park with the Walken impersonation, 7.8.
Dang, that's a high score. Maybe the highest we've had in a number of weeks. So
you
well
say
done.
That every time.
I know. I don't know why.
And it could be true every time.
It's kind of annoying.
I would like to thank Chris Evans, Chris Pine.
It's kind
Chris
of annoying.
Chris Hemsworth.
Chris Christie.
Definitely Chris Christie.
Chris Christie.
There's no other Chris in prominent politics that you could have even thought of. That was really good. All right. Look, forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This used to be a show, and that always makes people sad when I say that, so I apologize. But it's also a segment. It lives on as a segment. A ghost of its former self, yet a ghost that's entertaining and fun to have around. So we're gonna keep it alive. Exactly. It's where we predict the future, often in technology, sometimes in just various human ways. Tom, you have this one this week. What do you got here?
Yeah, okay. So maybe I've been taking cold medicine. But I was hearing about this discovery of an archaeological find of another human species that has a very similar brain case, but it's a little smaller, but they have feet that are like ours. And I was thinking, like, wow, it's just amazing how many different species of humans there were, right? We outcompeted them all. We're the only one left. But I'm thinking someday someone will use some preserved DNA from one of these finds to create primitive humans. Maybe it's like this one they found. Maybe it's the Denisovans or the Neanderthals or the Australopithecus. And eventually there'll be a theme park where you can visit proto-humans.
Wow. So ethics aside for a second, that's actually kind of a really cool idea. What if they were artificial humans? In other words,
Welcome to Neolithic Park.
near, exactly. Welcome. So if
we crossed one with a raptor.
What do you think? What do you think about them being robots, though? That'd be all right, because then we don't have the ethical problem.
No. These are biological entities.
But then,
Scott.
But then they'd be feeling, thinking.
Anybody can make a robot.
Sure, but the ethics and the.
Oh, ethics! you want to ruin this park's monetary possibilities right out of the gate, don't you? With your ethics.
Well, all right, let's throw it around the table and see if there's a way around.
Nothing
this.
Nothing could ever go wrong with this idea, Scott. Yeah, foreshadowing.
No one will have a problem with this at all. Andy, your thoughts on a future theme park where it's dudes and ladies, not dinosaurs or rides?
I will take it one horrifying step even further in our transhuman conversation, that people will look to add DNA to get specific features from there, and that'll become sort of the new hot thing.
Oh my gosh, you mean like a weird forehead or
Did you see my buddy Andy got the Neanderthal brow installed?
Yep.
So awesome.
Look at all the hair on my back. I didn't used to have this. Yeah, it's a bad idea. I don't like any of these ideas. You're terrible, Jenny.
My friend Jenny's like 9 feet tall now that she got her Denisovan DNA.
Oh, were they the tall ones? I always get that confused. Yeah. All right. Jenny, what would you do? What do you think?
All I have to say about this idea is, if you think it's weird parents having to explain to their kids what the pandas are doing behind the other side of the glass, you just wait till it's the Neanderthal.
I mean, that's like, where the money-making aspect of the whole park comes in.
Yeah, let's not get into the issue of the ethics, which would be terrible, and how terrible we would feel to see our previous selves behind glass. Like, and in cages, that's like that Twilight Zone.
They wouldn't be behind
where
glass. They'd be free range on an open
island. Let me tell you
island.
Something. Early life finds a way, and it is going to find a
way. Are there some webcams set up for NeanderthalCam.com? Maybe.
There's going to be drone footage of the escaped Neanderthals, and it's just going to be like, you just should lock yourself in a room during NaNoWriMo and just knock this out.
Okay, here's my thinking. Actually, that is a good idea. I'd read that book. Here's my thinking. Let's say the scientific discovery is that once we've created one from the DNA, we're like, oh, well, Jimmy's brain is no more advanced than a chimpanzee. In fact, the chimpanzees have advanced a little further even with their brain power. So because this particular Neanderthal tribe is all dumber than a chimpanzee, what's the difference in putting chimps in a...
Oh.
See what I'm saying? I'm just saying. So you know what happens then? This is what I think. It backfires, because what it doesn't do is put these people behind the glass. What it does is make them reassess whether or not we should be putting chimpanzees behind glass.
Yeah.
That's what will happen.
Although I think you may be struggling with the less pertinent ethical question, which I would say, don't eat the burgers at this park.
Yeah.
What, like artificial mastodon meat? Like, what's your thinking there?
Well, I'm thinking that maybe mine the local fauna.
I see.
Little long pig, shred it up.
Tom, this book writes itself.
Yep.
Get on your word processor.
It's better, because I sure ain't.
All right. Well, I really like this idea. Andy, any parting thoughts on our horrible, evil future of putting primitive man behind glass?
I hope I can't afford to go to this park.
It's going to be expensive. But they could do it. They don't have to do it in, you know, Peru or wherever. They could do it like, you know, New York or, you know, a big city. Philadelphia. Why not? San Diego Zoo. Just have a wing and not even
Galapagos.
A whole...
We could all go.
It's a terrible idea.
Let's just like overturn every piece of good sense and ethics.
Well, we blame the Dayquil. Is what we'll say on that one.
In all seriousness, like coming back from, obviously I'm being ridiculous if anyone thinks I'm being serious. I do wonder though if we'll ever get to the point where this will become an ethical question, right? And we'll have the ability to create a Denisovan or a Neanderthal, and we'll say it would be great for science to do this, but is it at all conceivable that we should?
It's a Star Trek question. It's an ethical human question to ask, and it's the same questions they always asked about data. When is something living? When is something an actual life form? And does it matter what it's made of? If it's, you know, sentient and understands, it's self-aware, and is that enough? And then, you know, you can get into the questions of,
you can't answer the question about did primitive humans have self-awareness as easily as you can if you create a primitive human to test it and find out.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. How else are you going to figure it out?
When you find out, you may have wished that you hadn't done it because it was wrong.
What if there is... See, that's the other thing. Like, let's say all you did was make the brain, but you had a computer apparatus that could read that brain and sense it and get all of its thoughts. And so in other words, all you did... It would be pretty gross, but it'd be behind a little thing. You wouldn't have to look at it very long. But you hook it up, hit a few buttons, and you go, oh, okay, it's functioning. It's like a brain. And then you realize, oh, crap, I have created a living... being, really. It may be without a body.
It has no body. It can't express itself.
It can't.
Like Johnny's got a gun for cavemen.
Oh my gosh. This is really deep, man. I'm not used to
this. This is a
deep
Reddit thread just waiting to happen.
Ain't it though?
All right, like Reddit. Subreddit. Do your work at currentgeek.reddit.com then. That's what we say. Real quick, we do have an email we got at currentgeek@gmail.com. You are welcome, nay, encouraged to send emails there. Danny Trounce is his name. That's a great last name. I think I'm saying that right. Would you say Trounce? Trounce? Trounce.
What he does to his enemies.
I guess so. He says, hi, Tom, Scott, and guests. Love the show. Have you guys ever said if you have an all-time favorite video game? I'd love to know what they might be. Again, from Danny. We'll go around the table. I want to try to guess Tom's just because I think I know. Is your favorite game of all time Civilization 2?
Probably.
Okay.
You know, what's hard about that is I couldn't make up my mind until I heard what you said. And I'm like, yeah, probably. SimCity 2000 particularly, right in there.
What a game.
But then there's the 80s era where I was a huge Pole Position fan.
Oh, yeah.
And Winter Games, the Epic's Winter Games and the Summer Games.
Summer
for
Games
Commodore
were fun,
64.
Too. Those were great. Nothing wrong with those.
But yeah, probably it would be between SimCity and Civ. Probably Civ.
Yeah. But clearly that's the genre that really...
Yeah.
Gotcha. Jenny, do you have a favorite video game experience?
So it's a toss up between Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. I sort of lumped them into one very long couple of years where we didn't do a lot of things other than play Fallout. That was just my first experience with like a true open world game, and it just knocked my socks off. I do have like a deep old fondness for Zork, but I don't even know if that qualifies as a video game.
I think so.
The first game I played.
I think Zork is
for sure
amazing. It's still amazing. Text-based adventures are some of my favorite things still because they're just these imagination pokers. But I think you can. I think it's safe if you say Fallout 3 I thought New Vegas was amazing. That's a fantastic freaking game. Yeah. I don't think too many people disagree with you. What would you say there, Andy? Do you have a favorite?
If we go purely on amount of time played, it would probably be Zelda as a series. Love Zelda, played it a lot, but I love any game where I can race a car. And so a Need for Speed, a Forza, those are the games that like I can sit down and I like them because they're almost like casual gaming in the sense that it's not like if I sit down and play some of these other games, it's like, you know, I'm in for the night. This is it. And mm-hmm. I can do this, and then I can walk away and go get some other things done.
It's kind of zen-like, yeah.
Yeah.
I used to feel that way about Wipeout.
That's why I like racing games. I'm a big fan of Forza as well.
Yeah, those are good.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for the new one.
6, right? Coming soon.
Yeah, it's supposed to be much better. And I didn't have the problems with the last one that a lot of people did, but this next one is apparently amazing.
Yeah. For me, it would probably have to be Mario 64.
Oh.
And the reasons are mostly not to do with the actual game itself, except to say that it established moving forward, even to this day, what people would do in three dimensions. And nobody had done that before. And it was utterly brilliant when it hit. It was just absolutely unbelievable. And everything that came since owes something to that pedigree. And I still think of it as fondly as anything I've ever played. So for me, it would be...
That makes me want to throw Ocarina of Time in.
Yeah, which was, what, 2 years after that even? And it was both those games were just, you know, for a console that you could otherwise say was, you know, there's not a lot of remarkable stuff, maybe GoldenEye and a couple of other games that, that really stood out. But the first party stuff was just groundbreaking, game-changing. You know, they had the first controller with an analog stick as a, well, that's not technically true. You could get one for the Saturn, but but it was a mainstream shift in the entire business. Everybody had to have sticks after that. Like, it just changed so many things. But in general, it's not considered that successful of a console. So it's just a really interesting thing Nintendo tends to do every once in a while, is just come and shake everything up. And game design just changed after that. And that's just it. If I'm playing a brand new, like, you know, the new Metal Gear Solid 5 game, it owes something to Mario 64. Just the way it is. So that's it for me. What a great question. Thank you for that, Danny. And anybody out there who has a question like that, please send them in. We're happy to field them right here on the show. And that is going to do it for us. Andy Beach, what a pleasure it is to have you on, dude.
Thank you. It was a blast.
Yeah, it was really great. Feel free to, you have anything you want to tell people about where they can find cool stuff you're doing, anything at all, please take the time and let us know.
So you can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Andy Beach. If you have a moment, please stop off. I have a Kickstarter running right now. I'm trying to make jam for folks. I make it for fun. I've been giving it to my friends. I decided I'd throw a little Kickstarter up and see if I could extend the reach a little bit. So if you go to bit.ly/jamly, J-A-M-M-L-Y, you can see what I'm doing and what I'm thinking about.
Pretty cool. And I've had, I can tell you from firsthand experience, he gave us some of the jams to try. We have one more to try on Monday, and they've all been amazing. And you should totally go and support that Kickstarter because it's yummy. Jenny, what's going on? What are you doing?
Well, I have this podcast called Tell It Anyway, in which people get together and tell stories. And upcoming, this coming week, one Scott Johnson will be the guest. And I'm very excited about that. But if you've never heard it before, there are 19 other episodes you can go listen to catch. There's no catching up. It's episodic. And then also, so I'm super excited about this other one I'm producing called Hooray for Garbage Town, which is all about two young ladies, Miss Jackie Vleck and Sarah Jean Krichowski, trying to make it as writers in Los Angeles. And they are just some of the most open, honest people talking about the process. And they talk to a woman from Seth Rogen's production company, whose name is Alex McAtee. She's a lady. And they just have such an incredible discussion of the kind that you rarely hear about what it's really like to try to make it and be a garbage in the land of Lala. So that's Hooray for GarbageTown.com. Go check it out.
Nice. And I had so much fun on that episode of Tell It Anyway.
It was awesome. It made me really happy.
I hope people like it. And don't ask you to never have me on again.
Never.
For my weird story. Tom Merritt, anything else, sir?
Well, I just backed the Jam Kickstarter, so I invite everyone else to do that with me. Proof is on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. And this weekend at Dragon Con, I was very surprised and pleased that several people came up with copies of Citadel 32 to sign, and they claim that they enjoyed the story.
Oh.
They didn't buy it just for the cover because they wanted me to sign it too, not just Scott. So, and Scott did the amazing cover, by the way. So check it out, tommerrittbooks.com. You can get a free PDF if you don't want to take a flyer on it, but you can buy it through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places.
I already have the perfect cover in my head for your new Cavemen Behind Glass story you're going to write this November. So we'll see how that turns out. That's going to do it for
Caveman Island.
For those who have, and some people have been asking, is that Extra Life compilation book I'm doing only for Kickstarter? No, when it is done and we're all fulfilled, it'll be available on the store. So for those asking on the Current Geek email, that is true. You can totally get it that way. I'll let you know when it goes up. Other than that, I think that's it for us. Leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. No one ever does that, but when you do, we love it. So please do that. You can email us. Again, at Current Geek. Current GIF, GIF.
Current Jeep. It's our new spinoff about automotive.
Actually, who says GIF? Who says GIF? Around the table here, real quick.
GIF.
GIF? Andy?
GIF.
All right. Tom? Gajif. Ah, you have to be different every time. I love it. All right. It's not that. It's currentgeek@gmail.com. You can call us. I mentioned that. Go to Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson on Twitter. Ace Detect on Twitter. Currentgeek.reddit.com, of course, is the Reddit again. And currentgeek.com. All things are there. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with a whole new show. Until then, take care.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review the second of the two highlight decisions of the most recent Supreme Court term, which is Obergefell versus Hodges, all about gay marriage. The decision was based on the Equal Protection Clause and due process under the 14th Amendment. The due process clause stops the government from depriving citizens of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Many previous Supreme Court decisions have deemed liberty, under the due process clause, to include the fundamental right to marry and have private sexual relations. This includes decisions protecting interracial marriage in Lawrence v. Texas, protecting the right of prisoners to marry in Turner v. Safely, and protecting the rights of women as equals in marriage in multiple 1980s decisions. Furthermore, Obergefell is a logical extension of the decision 12 years ago making sodomy laws unconstitutional for infringing the liberties of gay people, and the decision 2 years ago to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act. Thus, this was just the next logical step based on court precedent as well as public opinion. The right to marry has long been established as a fundamental right, which means there must be a compelling government interest to restrict this liberty. The states argued that the compelling government interest was keeping bonds between biological parents and their children, but this was gutted during oral argument by noting that not all marriages are intended to result in biological children, and adoptions are just as likely for homosexual couples as they are for heterosexual couples. There was just not enough argument for leaving this decision to the states instead of applying the Equal Protection Clause. So gay marriage is now legal in all states. The reason I believe this is not as big a deal as the healthcare decision is because healthcare would have gone away completely had that decision gone the other way. While public opinion was eventually going to result in most, if not all, states reaching this conclusion about gay marriage. Furthermore, this is one small step in the large scale of obtaining equal rights in all parts of the LGBT community, as evidenced by the just beginning public awareness and discussion of transgender people, so there's still a long way to go here. The bottom line is, for at least this court watcher, the decision to uphold Obamacare is a bigger deal than legalizing gay marriage, but both cannot be denied as highly memorable decisions that definitely craft the future of this country. Until next time, let's continue to strive for and make communities that treat everyone equally and with compassion. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions or segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.